up in your mind? Getting old, I guess. You're never too young to start doing estate planning. But kind of in a nutshell, it's making plans in advance for the management of your, the transfer of your assets. Estate planning can also be more than just the money. I've known people that have actually put in their wills, or they filed papers with their wills, kind of leaving a non-financial legacy. And they'll leave a certain part of their character to a child, and they'll say, I hope that you have learned from me this, and I hope you've learned from me that, which I think is really neat. But we'll talk about mainly the financial aspect. It ensures your legacy. What is a legacy? Leaving behind. We all hope we can leave things better than we found them, but it's you can leave a financial legacy. Your children can be your legacy. Your church work can be your legacy. Considers the family or beneficiaries. Okay, a lot of the times we call these heirs. It considers them. Will family interest be protected? That's an important question. People want to know that. And then, will family benefit properly from their inheritance? That's a big question, because you see in the news all the time these children that are spoiled rotten because they've been left so much money. Question for you. I'll wait for our door prize here in a minute. I'm not going to do it on this one. But can you disinherit a spouse? No. Okay. Can you disinherit a child? Yes. Okay. I don't recommend that necessarily, but no definition of an automatic child share. I mean, that's something that it doesn't have to happen, but you cannot disinherit a spouse. There's always some really interesting cases that come up where people have mixed marriages, but it's where they have children from different marriages and they've been married several times. But what can happen is they forget about maybe a life insurance policy over here, that they never change the beneficiary. That may be what they were counting on to leave their legacy, and it goes to their ex-wife or it goes to their ex-husband, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because we're going to talk about that in a minute. There are assets that don't go through your will, and there are assets that do. And that's a big, big deal when we're talking about estate planning. Okay, well, let's talk about probate. It's really not a dirty word. It's not a really bad thing. It's the legal or judicial certification of a will. It's a good thing, especially if you have a executor that's not really that qualified, that they don't really have you don't have to have a financial degree to be an executor, but it allows them to get some help. And probate involves collecting the assets, paying the death taxes, paying the liabilities, and then dispersing money. Why do we need probate? Well, to protect the assets. If we didn't have a judicial certification of a will, then a creditor could come and try to get your money from you, and they wouldn't be given any type of priority, and it would be chaos. And to provide court guidance, it's very important to provide court guidance. Can anybody tell me how long probate lasts? Does anybody know? Who has acted as the executor for somebody?
In the last 6 months, minimum.
6 months? Really, typically 9 months is where, I mean, I've seen one estate come out in 6 months, but typically 9 months is how long. There's a, depending on your state, and I didn't bring my book with me, so I'm not up on Kentucky and West Virginia, but there's a time period where you have to advertise that the person has died so that people know, and there's a time period. If you don't advertise, then it's longer. It could be up to 6 months. If you advertise 3 months that the death has occurred, you've got a death notice. It can last. Now, it can also last 8 years. It can last 10 years. Not probate. It shouldn't last that long. But it's really up to you, as the decedent, Sometime we're all going to die at some point, but you need to have your affairs in order. And there's a scripture, it basically says, have your affairs in order, for tomorrow you will die. You know, just to remind us that we're not here forever. But you really need to have, if you can consolidate things, you need to consolidate them. If you have a will, you need to have a copy in a safe place. You need to have a copy at home. You need to give your executor a copy. You need to give, if you want to, you can give your beneficiaries a copy. I know that gets a little interesting, but you don't have to do that. And make sure if you get a new will, destroy all the other copies. That is such a problem, finding all these different copies of wills. But there's a lot of things like that. Who, an executor or personal representative? Yes, sir.
Is there ever a case where you should file your will of record?
File your will? Yeah, they don't file wills.
You can do it yourself.
Yeah, well, you mean with the probate court?
No, just with the recorder's office or clerk's office.
They don't do that.
I don't think they do that.
Just power of attorney papers and stuff, because you get the original will.
I know they don't do that in Tennessee.
You can record anything, basically.
Well, I guess you could. It's just, I don't know the answer to that.
I know somebody from one of our relatives, an in-law passed away. He's an attorney, and they're pretty sure he had a will, but they think somebody destroyed it.
Follow the law on that. We've seen a lot of problems at Fried Hardeman. Well, there was one case we were involved in, and I say 8 years. It took 8 years, and there was the latest. You may think, oh well, let's just go by the latest will. Well, no, that was the one that was signed with undue influence by a great niece that came from nowhere and had this her great aunt sign this will, and she didn't know what she was doing. And so it could take a very long time, but that's why I say destroy. Now, your attorney will keep a copy. Not the original, but they'll keep a copy. The attorneys I like to work with, they will keep a copy. Fried Hardeman used to prepare wills, and we would keep a copy, but it's really your responsibility to keep a copy, and you need to give that copy to your executor. You really need to give it to your personal representative. And please tell your executor that they are going to be the executors. You can refuse to be an executor. And if you do, then the court will appoint one for the estate. I think it's always good to have a second person there, a successor, in case someone predeceases you. Same thing with your durable power of attorney. We're going to talk about those documents in a minute. But they're legally responsible, which means they're on the hook. If they do something wrong, they're on the hook. They can be sued personally, and they do receive payment. It depends on the state. I don't know what it is in Kentucky or West Virginia. Typically 5% or less, but because it is a big job. It does take a lot of time. It does take a lot of effort. But anyway, let's roll on a little bit here and keep your questions. Maybe keep some of your questions till we finished off the estate part. Estate and gift tax rates. Now, estate tax is not as big a deal as it used to be, and I may need some help here. Has the Kentucky and the West Virginia inheritance tax exemption followed the federal exemption? Does anybody know?
Kentucky has.
That's very important. Tennessee's has not. It's $1 million. So right now, if you were to die this year, you could transfer $2 million free and clear of any estate taxes. This is the highest tax rate, 45%. It's terrible. 45% is the highest tax rate. Now, you're not going to hit that until you get, I don't know, $3.5, $4, or $5 million. You're not going to hit that. But it starts at 18% for estate and gift tax. But it's 45 is the top. Next year, you can pass $3.5 million free and clear. So a lot of this is not going to hit a lot of us in the room. In Tennessee, it very much does, because we have a gap, what's called a gap. You can only pass $1 million in the state of Tennessee. And so if you have a lot of insurance, that could shoot your estate up quickly to $1 million. And so we have what's called a gap trust to try to fix that. But in 2010, there's no tax. And the The gift tax rate is 35%. There is a gift tax, but there's no estate tax. In 2011, does anybody know what the estate tax is in 2011?
Obama will tell us.
Obama will tell us. Right now, it's $1 million. And I'm pretty sure, going back to his plan, somewhere between 3 and 5 million. But the thing that scares me with Obama on this is capital gains. First of all, he's planning on increasing the capital gains tax rate. Currently, it is 5 and 15%, and he is talking about increasing it back up to 28%, I think, which is a lot. What worries me about this whole thing is some people want to get rid of estate taxes, but what they want to do is get rid of what we call the step-up in basis at death. If I buy a stock for $100 a share, or a dollar a share, and it goes to $100 a share, and that's what it's worth when I die, if someone goes to sell it that received it from my estate, do they pay any gain if it's still $100 a share? No, because they got a step up, okay? Well, what they want to do, though, is remove that. So all that appreciation gets taxed. It's much better to give cash while you're living and appreciated assets when you die because you get a step up in basis. It's the opposite when it goes to charity. It's better to give appreciated assets while you're living to charity and cash at death. So anyway, that scares me. That really worries me because there's a lot of people that would have to pay a lot of taxes. So we're going to see a lot of movement in this type of thing. At Fried Hartman, when we do a plan, we use the $2 million, but we assume that it's going to go back to $1 million. Which may make it a lot more conservative of a plan, but that's all we can do because that's what the tax says. So are there any questions on this? Now I'm going to show you an example in a minute on how, now each of us can pass $2 million. Now we're talking about big numbers here, but it can affect some of us in this room. $2 million, each of us, that's $4 million total. But you have to plan your estate correctly to take advantage of both of those. Because if you don't set something up at the first death, you waste it. And I'm going to show you an example of that later. Okay, one of the biggest things I want to talk about today are beneficiary designations. Retirement assets pass directly to the beneficiary. They do not go through the will. Okay, so if you have a retirement account or an IRA and it has your spouse as a beneficiary, it goes directly to your spouse. Or it has a child, it goes directly to the child. It does not go through your estate. You have an annuity, doesn't go through your estate unless your beneficiary is your estate. Okay, so remember that. If all your assets are tied up in retirement accounts, your will is not going to make a hill of beans difference because it's not going to affect it. It goes by operation of law automatically. It's a great way to get assets in the hands of your beneficiaries quickly because it doesn't have to go through. I mean, you do have to have a letter, testamentary, and a death certificate to get that asset to you as beneficiary. But remember that. Now, spouse as the beneficiary, this is generally the best option. Money will be available to the spouse automatically, okay? The spouse can roll over the account into his or her account. Only a spouse can roll over the deceased account into her account. So the wife can roll her husband's into hers, or the husband can roll the wife's into his. Yes, sir.
We learned something that I never knew. It's kind of simple. The power of attorney does not mean administrator.
Right.
You have to, as a spouse, you have to have power of attorney and administrator in order to get into any of the accounts or anything like that.
At death, power of attorney doesn't do anything. Now, at incapacity, a durable power of attorney does. Durable means that there's a power that continues to work while they're incapacitated. So when they can't make decisions, they don't have the mental capacity to make decisions, you can continue to make decisions for them. Yes, sir.
As I understand you to say that should my wife and I have stock, IRA or otherwise, and either one of us die, the other one can roll what that one has over into them.
Yes.
Without tax at that time?
Correct. Well, if by way of the marital deduction, spouses can transfer money at any time during life, and at death there's no taxes, but the best option is to go ahead and roll that over into their own. On the spousal?
If you don't have an estate plan.
Oh, yes. If you don't have an estate plan, you're...
And then they have to continue the disbursement each year.
They have to continue to the joint...
They can roll over at that time without that.
That's right. And usually it's a better option as far as how much they have to take out of the account. Because you want to take out the less amount. You have to... The mandatory distribution, you want that to be as small as possible. And usually with the... When rolling it over into your account, it helps with that. A spouse can wait till they're 70 and a half. So if you were already taking distributions, they don't have to continue to take your distributions if they're not 70 and a half. That's why that's also a good thing. And then the life expectancy can be recalculated. And so that always continues. It's what we call a stretch out. It stretches out the distributions. So this is generally the best option. Now, I also think it's a good idea to have a contingent beneficiary on your IRA accounts, because then at the spouse's death, the children then can become beneficiaries instead of the estate, because if the estate is the beneficiary, it all comes out. It has to come out within 5 years or a lump sum, and the taxes will be much higher, because what is the issue with a retirement account as far as estate taxes go? You've not paid income taxes on the retirement monies. And so whoever takes the money out, I don't care if it's the spouse or your children, they have to pay income taxes. Okay? And
Roth
wouldn't matter, but the kids do have to take distributions based on their life expectancy. But they don't have to pay taxes on the money. You don't even have to take distributions out of it. Okay. Is that clear as mud, or... Okay, well, if you have questions, ask me. You can go ahead and ask me now or later, whenever. Okay, here's some common mistakes. Transfers between spouses are tax-free, okay? But joint assets can cause problems. 100% of assets pass to the survivor, and that would waste the $2 million. I call simple wills, honey, I love you wills. You know, I love you. You mean everything to me. I'm going to give you everything I have. That's great, but it can waste that first exemption because you don't shelter it. And I'm not going to say much more about that. I want to show you an example because it can get very confusing. Simple wills may not be the best. You need a family trust, family credit trust, marital trust. They're called a lot of different things. I'm not going to go into detail on the different types. But you need to have most assets in separate name to fund one of these. Because if you have joint assets, cannot fund one of these trusts at the first death because they're joint assets. Okay? Joint assets, if you do a joint account with a child, it does not save estate taxes. Okay? So if you just put their name on an account and you contributed all the money to it, it's your name. Your name. But it will go to them automatically. Okay? All right, here is my example. These are big numbers again because it has to be to show you what happens with the tax. Total estate of $2.5 million. Now remember, if you have an insurance policy and it's in your name, if you're the owner, that's all included in the value of your estate. Now, you don't pay taxes. The person that inherits the money, that's the beneficiary, does not pay taxes on insurance proceeds. But it is included in your estate for estate tax purposes. Okay, if we have a $2.5 million estate, and we do a simple will where everything goes to the spouse, there will be estate taxes of $225,000. Okay. Now, I just told you, though, you can each pass $2 million. That's $4 million. Why is there taxes? Well, because you left everything by way of the marital deduction. You left everything to the spouse. Then at their death, they now have $2.5 million in their name. Well, they only get a $2 million. This is if everybody dies this year. It's the only way we can do these. But... So they have a $2.5 million estate. They have to pay estate taxes. Okay, so how do we solve that? Well, at the first death, you have, let's say, $1.5 million go into this shelter trust. Now, the remaining spouse can have benefit to this. Health, education, maintenance, and support. They can even tell the trustee, I need extra money for this, that, and the other. but it grows outside of their estate. This could grow to $20 million and it will never be taxed again on a state tax basis. $1 million is in the survivor's estate. There's no taxes at death because they're in two different buckets, basically. And so you've just saved $225,000 in tax, in estate tax. And that's just federal. But you shouldn't have any, you shouldn't have any state tax because there's no gap. Well, there would be. You would actually save state taxes too, inheritance tax. Does that make sense, how that works? If you don't park some assets over here in this trust and you pass it all to the spouse, if it's over $2 million, the surviving spouse only gets one $2 million exemption, not two. That dies with you, or it can be used as a trust. Now, this is about to go to $3.5 million, so it may not even matter for you, but I just wanted you to see how that works. Are there any questions, probably? Yes, you have to do it before you die. And basically, in your estate, in the will, it'll say, I want you to pass everything to my except, portion, the largest portion that will pass free and clear of estate taxes, and that goes over into this credit trust. So that way, if it changes, your will can change. You don't have to have it drafted again. Right.
Well, if they went to children and they had to come up with $500,000 or $250,000 in estate taxes, I mean, that's due.
Right. And so how do they get the money?
They lose the farm.
They have to sell
the farm. Because they can't pay the taxes up front. I mean, they can't do it.
Let me give you an example. When I was working at Wachovia, one of our clients died, and he had a son and a daughter. Make it good, nice and simple here. The son was in the family business, which was farming, and the daughter could care less. She lived out in California, and they were, she and her brother were estranged. They didn't speak to each other. They didn't have a good relationship. So he said, well, I've got, he had $1 million in qualified money and tax-deferred money and $1 million in the farm. It was a little bit more, but just for the sake of this illustration. That money in the retirement account went automatically to the daughter, okay? But his estate was $2 million. So who had to pay taxes on the $2 million? The son, because she got the IRA automatically, and to get that farm, he had to pay the taxes. So he had to sell it. And so the daughter got $1 million, and the son only got $645,000, $55,000, and he didn't get the farm. So you gotta think about those beneficiary assets. They go first. They're included in the value, but they still go free and clear of estate taxes. I mean, they're paid by somebody.
You're saying $2 million. I believe you said that's 10 or 6.
That was a few years ago. That was several years ago. That was when the estate tax was $1 million.
Okay, what is it then?
Well, I think we're saying it's the same. It's $2 million. You can pass $2 million per person. Yeah, that's what we think. Yes. There's no gap.
Okay. Written on the credit bypass trust, what happens to the funds in that after the second spouse passes away?
They would then go to the children, or they could go to charity, or who?
Are they tax-free?
Yes, they're tax-free. They are state tax-free.
Because it's already been accepted from the...
They've already used their exemption.
Okay.
Now, you can also do this while you're living. You have $2 million you can give away. It'll all come back into the calculation at the end, but you can give, if you want to give more, I can give $12,000 to anybody I want to without any tax ramifications for me. Well, if I want to give more 1 year, I can use part of this to do it. But then at the end, you're not going to have $2 million. You're going to have less because you use some of it. Now, does everybody know that? You can give $12,000 a year to anybody if you're married. Then jointly you can give $24,000 to anybody. If you give more than that to one person, who pays the taxes on the gift? No, the donor pays the taxes on a gift, which is unfair. Terribly unfair.
But does that include everything? I mean, you give them $2,000 for Christmas
Well, under the exemption, you're okay. But if you give them over $12,000, you're supposed to fill out a gift tax return.
I mean, it could be a combination of things. I mean, it could be gifts, or I mean, in kind or cash or whatever you give. If it's over $12,500 a year or $12,000 a year.
But if you're married, of course, you can split it, and it can be $24,000. But yes, technically, it's any type of gift. The aggregate of it is $24,000 or above. You've got to fill out a gift tax return. Now, does everybody do this? No, but you're supposed to by law. And it starts at 18%. The first dollar above that limit is taxed at 18%. Why do we have a tax like that? Can anybody tell me?
Redistribution of income.
It's preventing people from passing things off and lowering their estate tax before they die. They're going to get it one way or the other. This is one way they try to stop that. Okay.
Did you say the 12,000, anything over 12,000, they give them pay tax? But what about the 12,000?
No, they don't pay taxes. Now, if it's an income generating asset and there's income taxes on it, then the new owner, like say it's stock and they pay a dividend, the new owner would pay the dividend.
But what is tax?
No tax on the recipient, just like an inheritance. Mm-hmm. The recipient doesn't pay a tax. But the giver does if it's more than that level. Yeah. But you would think the person receiving it would pay the tax, but that's not true. It's the person giving it. Yeah. Yeah, at this point, let me say, please make sure you've got enough money. Don't give anything away if you don't have the money to do it. Okay. All right, he's worrying. He's like wanting to know where that stash is. Talking about having a little bit in your billfold, I was one of our good friends at the university. His wife passed away, and he knew she always stashed a little bit back over the years. But when she died, he was going through her closet and found a shoebox, and it had almost $5,000 in cash. And so he went out and bought a couple big screen TVs with it. So I don't know if that's what she wanted, but... That's what he did. So anyway, I thought that was funny. Okay, let's talk about a living trust. Can anybody tell me what a living trust is? Have you heard about a living trust? A lot of spouses do those. Well, it doesn't save estate taxes, but it may. It can simplify probate administration, because if you have your assets in a living trust, it does not go through probate. You skip the whole process. Okay, it will cost a little bit more in the beginning to have a living trust drafted by an attorney, but you save the taxes at the end because you don't have to get an attorney involved to distribute your estate. It can provide privacy over the estate. Does everybody in here know that if an estate goes through probate, it's a matter of public record? So I can go in and see, oh, they had this much money and it went to this person. If you want to avoid all that, you need to get a living trust. It can also simplify handling out-of-state probate or out-of-state real estate, because every state has their own probate with assets in that state. I know a lot of people have land in Florida. Florida especially, you need to have a living trust, because every county has a separate probate procedure. It's not statewide. It's every county in Florida. So you're going to have to hire an attorney in that county in Florida to help you probate. It's called ancillary probate. It's the name of it. But you're not going to save a lot of taxes on this. But it's a good thing if you want to avoid probate, you want to avoid any confusion, if you want there not to be as much of a time lag at death, you need to get a living trust. That's all I'm going to say about it now. If you have questions afterwards, we can talk about it. But it is a good... It is a good source. It doesn't save taxes, though. That's a mistake. But it is a good way to avoid a lot of the problems that can happen at death.
You're into a subject, though, that I've heard, and I'd like to know if you know anything about it. A lot of people go to Florida, Florida and Arizona are two states that have two members of both states. They have dual citizens in Florida and another state.
Right.
Can both states take tax out of your...
There is a residency requirement, and what happens typically is that they have to figure out how much time you spent in those states, and it would be the majority, whatever state you spent the majority of the time. Now, as far as the property goes, if it's property in that state, you know, that will go with that state. But as far as, now it's different in a lot of different states, but there's going to be a residency requirement figuring out how much time you spend in both places.
I heard a former insurance man told me that he knew somebody in North Carolina and Florida, and they had some stocks or whatever, and that both states could take tax out of that. They died when they had a dual residency.
On an equal basis?
I'm not sure how.
Yeah. I imagine it. I haven't heard that, but that's, you need, probably need to check into that if you're going to hold property in both of those places. I know there's several people that will.
Well, like stock, it wouldn't be in both of them. It would just be you had dual residency.
But you had dual residency. So for state, for inheritance tax in that state.
Correct.
Yeah. And that's why you probably would want to be domiciled in the state that had the largest exemption for inheritance tax purposes. But that's something to think about. I don't know the answer to that.
I don't know. I just heard that one night.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't verify that. I don't know. But there are some people that, let's say they have something they need to sell for capital gains taxes. They'll move. Some states are very generous when it comes to selling things for capital gains purposes. They'll move to that state, set up residency, and then sell the asset.
Florida and Arizona, I understand, are the only two states that has that, and they would be the states that would profit from some rich person coming in there. And
oh, I'm sure it's for a reason.
Yeah. It has a monetary reason.
Well, I'll check that out. I have not heard that. That's good.
You have to move. Could you set up an LLC?
Like a dummy corporation or something?
Dummy, but it'd be real. You'd have a real attorney.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to go there today. That's outside of my scope. I'm not an attorney. I'm a certified financial planner, just to remind you. I don't know the answer to that. Okay, now, if you do a living trust, though, remember, you have to retitle your assets. So just by setting up a living trust, if you don't change the ownership of your assets to go into that trust, it's like nothing ever happened. So what you would have to do is you'd have to take your deed to your house. You'd have to go to an attorney. You would have to have the title on it changed to, it would be the James Burton Williams Trust for Burton Williams. That's what would own my house now. If I don't do that, it doesn't go through your living trust. So there's a lot of people that do these and it never works because they don't retitle their assets. Okay. Let's talk about insurance for a minute. For estate planning, naming a spouse as the beneficiary of life insurance is not always the best option. A better approach, change the beneficiary to a credit trust, let's talk about irrevocable. The living trust, the reason why it doesn't save estate taxes is because it's revocable, which means you can change it at any time and put things in, take things out of it, and that makes it taxable. Irrevocable or irrevocable, it's outside of your estate. Okay? So if you're buying a big insurance policy, you probably need to buy it in a trust outside of your estate because at death, if you're the owner, it's in your estate. Now, I'm only talking about this in case you're planning on using insurance to pay your estate taxes. It just makes the problem worse because now your estate value is much higher for that insurance you bought. So think about that. And people do this second to die life insurance. So it's based on both life expectancies, not one. But that's a good policy to put in an irrevocable trust. I'm getting a little deep here. But it may, something I say may benefit somebody you know or yourself. But remember that your life insurance, it goes to the beneficiary. They don't pay taxes, but it's in your estate.
Is there any way that you can plan in the state where you don't pay taxes?
Oh, absolutely.
That's the one you
want. That's right. That's right. And if any of you have estate planning questions, If you want to sign up for a meeting afterwards, I can help you with that. But again, $2 million, if you have less than $2 million, then you don't have to worry about it as much. But remember, insurance is part of that, your house, all of your assets, any inheritance you may receive, it can get up there. It can. And then a million. It could. It was 600,000 when I started doing this. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. Now remember, that's now what you're saying is a great reminder to everybody. You need to review this every year to make sure it doesn't. Right. The $12,000. Well, except she does get a $2 million exemption.
Yeah, she does.
But she doesn't get yours. Yeah, yours is gone. Right. Yours is gone. Now, another thing that the government could do is limit that marital deduction. Right now, it's unlimited, where you can pass anything you want to your spouse. But it's a dollar cap on that. That would be bad. Or there's a $100,000 cap while you're living. So then you could actually be taxed if you give money to your spouse over $100,000. I'm not saying they would do that, but they're going to need taxes. They're going to need some revenue. Okay. Let's look at using gifts. Now remember, don't do this unless you can afford to give money away. But failing to use a $12,000 gift tax exemption or a portion, that should say $2 million. Sorry, I didn't update that. $2 million exemption. Joint gifts, you can give $24,000. A husband and wife can give $24,000 to anybody every year. But there's no step up in basis. So if you have a stock that you bought for $10 a share, now it's worth $100 a share, if you give that while you're living to a child, when they sell it, they'll pay tax based on $10 a share. So they'll have a big capital gain. So it's better to give them cash while you're living, give them stock at death. Or give them an appreciated asset at death because it's step-up basis. Okay, questions about that? Does that make sense? Clear as mud again? No income taxes to children at the time they receive the gift. And then saves taxes on gifts plus the appreciation. So if I give $12,000 away and it ends up growing to $100,000, it doesn't matter. I don't own it anymore. It's outside of my estate. So think about that. If you have something that you think is really going to boom, you have some property that is in the I-69 corridor or somewhere they're putting a new road, then think about that. You may want to go ahead and give that now. Okay, why are people reluctant to make gifts? Well, too complicated. All you need to do is create a joint account in the names of the children only. Okay? Do not want to spoil the children? Well, you need to use a trust to control the principal. In other words, just give them a little money every year instead of giving them everything. Children not good managers of money? Again, you can use some type of trust. You're afraid you'll run out of money? Again, don't give it if you can't afford to give it. And then you don't realize tax savings. Now, you remember back, let's go back to this slide, right here. See that 45%? That's the maximum rate. For every $1,000, if you're in that tax bracket, if you're in that estate tax bracket, for every $1,000 you give away, well, let me go back. There it is. For every $1,000 you give away, it saves you $450 in estate taxes plus appreciation. Again, that's only if you're in that top bracket. But you may be in that top bracket, that estate tax bracket. That's $450 on every $1,000. This is why people give while they're living. And this is why the government tries to get their portion if you give more than you're supposed to while you're living annually. Yeah, well, your joint, it's with you and the child. Okay. But now, you would just create an account in the child's name if you wanted to get it out of your estate. If you wanted to just give them money, you would do a joint account with your name and the child's name. One child. Their name is the owner of the account.
Would you mean just fund that account?
Yeah, fund that account, and that's a way to give them money.
But would they have access to it immediately?
They could have access to it immediately. It just depends on what you want to do. Remember, if they're 14 years old and they make, I think it's over $1,400. I don't know what the, no, it's $700 or $800 anyway. There's what's called a kiddie tax. They pay tax at your maximum rate. So if they're 14 or under and you're giving them money or they have income off money you've given them, if they make over a certain amount, they're taxed at the parent's maximum rate, not their rate, which would be 15%. Their rate would be much lower. There's no advantage unless you just want everything to take place at your bank and just have the money for them there and they could access it whenever they needed to. Anybody. You can give $12,000 to me today. You'll be all right. You don't have to pay any tax. She can give me $12,000. You don't have it. She can give me $12,000. Yeah. So if you have a son who's married, that's two. So that's $48,000 so far. And then they have two more. They have two children. That's $96,000. Is that right? $96,000. Had an example. A buddy of mine. His parents gave him part of their ownership in a house. And they gave it on December 31st and January 1. So in 2 days, they got the whole house out of their name because it was a different tax year. So they didn't have to file a gift tax return. Think about that. Okay, moving on. Charitable beneficiary. This is an easy way, obviously, to avoid income taxes on retirement plans. Because remember, retirement plans are the most effective assets because you've not paid income taxes. Does the church here pay income taxes? No, they don't pay taxes. They pay property taxes maybe, but not income taxes. So this is the best asset to give them, especially at death, because somebody's going to have to pay the income taxes, and it might as well be charity because they don't have to pay any taxes. So retirement assets are the best thing to give away at death. Or if you're 70 and a half or older, you can do it while you're living. You can roll it over. Other assets get a step up in basis, but not retirement assets. They don't get a step up in basis. You can do a charitable remainder trust, which we'll talk about in a minute. Spouse gets income for life, so nothing changes there. She would get the minimum distribution, or he would get the minimum distribution, and then at death, whatever's left goes to the church, goes to charity. Okay. That's all estate planning. So before we go on to creative giving, are there any questions, anything I missed on estate planning? It can get very complicated, very difficult. I just wanted to talk mainly about what the levels are, talk about beneficiary designations, how it's important not to leave everything to your estate, not to put that you're the beneficiary of your own plan, because then the money all has to come out unless you have some type of exotic trust to take that money at death and do these other things with it. But on basic estate planning, you don't need to be the beneficiary of your own plan because it'll all have to come out at death.
What's your opinion about in the will staging gifts to your children instead of getting it at death, if they get it over a period of 20 years at a certain time?
I like that idea. You know, you can do those with trusts where they would only get the income, or they get the income and maybe some of the principal, depending on what the trustee wants to do. You do have to name a trustee, but the spouse could be the trustee. And then once they turn maybe 50 or once they turn 40, they get all of their share. I think it's a great idea because that handles that spoiling part we talked about earlier.
And you can stage it over, I mean, 25, 30, whatever, I mean, so much
time. Or you can give part of the principal. And say at the end, there's nothing left. At the end of 50 years or 30 years or 10 years. You do need to get an attorney involved for that to draw up a trust. Any other questions? Okay, you may have some afterwards, and I'd be glad to answer them. Okay, I want to talk about creative giving. We have about 30 minutes left. Gifts to your church can be broken down into two categories, annual giving and planned giving. Annual giving is immediate giving. Who can tell me what's an immediate gift? How do you do that? You write a check, okay, or you can give stock or things like that. And then there's future gifts. Let's talk about annual gifts. You can give cash gifts. You can give collectibles. I want to talk about collectibles a minute. Now, that's up to the eldership if they want to end up owning an antique car or something like this. But I want to tell you something about collectibles. Guess what their capital gain tax rate is? 28%. It's not 10, it's not 5 or 15. So I think you've got the collectible car back there, right? Coin collections, you know, there's a lot of different things. I'm trying to be creative here. Creative ways to give. Let's say the church, I know you all built this building, I think, 4 years ago or so. When you were raising the money for this, you could have maybe given a special gift. But collectibles are taxed at 28%. So if you bought them for $100 and now they're worth $1,000, that's $900 of gain, and you're going to have to pay 28% on it. So think about collectibles. Again, you have to talk to the eldership about taking things like that. A highly appreciated gift. So I'm talking about stock. Great idea to give stock, especially for special giving opportunities. Stock dividends, paid up life insurance policies. That's something people forget about. They don't really need back when they had a lot of money. They're all off on their own. They don't need the money. If you were to die, the church could take the insurance policy, or they could pull the cash value out. There's money there that you can give out of those. And then real estate. It's very easy to give real estate. You just do a quick claim deed. Have an attorney draft a quick claim deed. Deed it to the church. Church sells property. Make sure you complete the deed before you sell the property. In fact, make sure you do the deed before you've identified a buyer for the property. But that's another way you can give annual gifts to the church. Okay, let's talk about, and in-kind gifts. Now, this is a good idea. Let's say one of you owns a lumber mill and the church wants to build a playground. Well, you've got that lumber and you can deduct the retail value of that lumber that you give to them. Okay, so think about in-kind gifts. Or there may be things you're giving the church right now that are of value and you bought it. In other words, you have a receipt. You could get the church to give you and this is any charity, they need to give you a receipt for what you bought. Or if you don't get a receipt, you can deduct it on your taxes. If you don't have a receipt, you can do that. But in-kind gifts, that's non-cash. There's all kinds of things like that you may need. But that's a way to give annually. Now, on cash gifts, that's checking account, savings account, money market account, CDs. That's where a lot of the cash is. Here's the collectible, stamps, coins, antiques, alternative to cash. Appraisals are done. Appraisals are the donor's responsibility. If the asset is $5,000 or more, you have to have an appraisal to take a tax deduction. I'm taking all the fun out of giving. I know I'm giving you all the tax stuff. But really, you need to make a gift if you want to make a gift. You need to have donor intent. You need to want to give. You don't need to just give to save money necessarily. But you have to have an appraisal. Okay, highly appreciated gifts. Life insurance, we kind of talked about that. Let me look at an example here. Okay, here's an example. John's Walmart stock. John purchased $100 of Walmart stock 20 years ago. His stock is now worth $10,000. I'm not saying that's exact, just an example. He would have $9,900 of gain if sold. Okay, and if he was paying 5 or 15%, you could see how that would add up. Well, it would be a bit different. It would be better if he gave the stock to the church instead of his cash. The church sells the stock and pay capital gains tax. So there's an idea for you. Just throwing that out there. Let's look at his life insurance policy. John no longer needs his life insurance policy. He wants to make a gift to the church. He makes the church the owner and the beneficiary. By making the church the beneficiary, a gift is not completed yet. It would only happen at death. But if he made them the owner, then they would be the owner at the time, and he would receive a charitable deduction for the premiums he's paid. Not for the value of the policy, but for what he's put into the policy. John gives the church his paid up cash value policy. He would then receive a charitable deduction for the cash value. Do we have any insurance agents in the group? Anybody sells insurance? One of the things we do at Fried Hardeman for a lot of our younger alums is they will purchase a life insurance policy and make Fried Hardeman the owner and the beneficiary. And as they give us their gift every month by payroll deduction, it goes into the premium for their life insurance policy, and they get an annual tax deduction off the premiums going in now instead of waiting, because we're the owner and the beneficiary. But if we were just the beneficiary, they would get no deduction. So that's something to think about. And instead of giving a little, you're giving a lot more, you know, eventually. And I don't really think, as far as giving goes, we're supposed to give of our first fruits. It doesn't tell us the percentage necessarily. You know, tithe is mentioned. But giving of your first fruits, I don't think it needs to stop at death. If you're accustomed to giving 10%, I think you ought to give 10% of your estate too. Because when you're gone, you know, nobody else is there to give that money. Okay, this is a kind of a complicated example, but I need to show you this. This is qualified retirement plans. This should have been earlier in the presentation. I guess it's in the wrong place. This is really not in the right place, but I want to show you how it works. I talked about estate taxes, that 45%. I also talked about income taxes. Well, it's not a double tax. So if you leave your retirement plan to your children, your estate could be taxed, and then they're taxed on the income, but it's not a double tax. Income tax rules allow for a deduction for the percentage of your estate taxes paid. You get a deduction on income taxes. Your beneficiaries do, is they take money out of the account. It's called IRD. But I want to show you the example of what happens if you leave a plan, retirement, to charity. Okay, this is what happens. Total IRA value, $100,000. Okay? If he's in the maximum tax bracket, 45%, he has to pay 45% on that. And then he's in the 35% tax bracket, which is going up, by the way, because we have a new president. It's probably going to be 39.6. But so then you have $35,000 in income taxes. So that would be $80,000, right? Well, you get a $15,750 deduction because you already paid 45% in estate tax. So the net tax is $19,250. So that should not say net. Yeah. So then that should say net cash to his heirs. 64%. This is what happens. I'm showing you what happens. If you have retirement plans, they go through the estate, they could be taxed up to 45%, and then they take income tax off that. Instead of $100,000, they get $35,000. So it's much better to give stock to family, give cash to family, and let me hold just 1 second. Let me show you what happens when you give it to charity. $100,000, no estate taxes, no income taxes, that should say 45%. Can y'all tell that I put this together at 3 o'clock on Thursday afternoon? No, I was trying to update it, and I ran out of time because we had to leave town. Net cash to charity, $1,000. You see the difference? If you do the other one, you give $35,000. If you do this, you're giving $100,000. So watch the assets you're giving at death. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, they can leave it as stock and not have to pay tax or anything, can't they?
Right.
So it is, if they are foolish enough to say, I'm going to buy a bunch of stuff and draw it out, then they do.
Right, and they have to pay tax.
If they have sense enough to spread it out, they can.
But if you leave it in your estate and it doesn't go up in value, they don't pay any taxes. They don't pay any capital gains, because it goes through your estate and you get a step up. But what I'm afraid of is that in the future, this may be eliminated, and that would not be very good.
Those kids don't understand. They think this is a gift. I'll spend it now when they really need to save it for retirement.
Well, and you can do that by what Mark mentioned. You can put it in a trust and over time give it to the children. Okay, plan gifts. I want to save a little bit of time for questions. Let's look at plan gifts. John's farm. This is a real interesting one. John bought a farm 30 years ago. He paid $100,000 for it. It's now appraised for $500,000. The donkey's not too happy because he's going to sell the farm. That's why he doesn't look good. By selling the farm, he has a sizable gain, and he could lose control of the farm. By giving the farm to a charity, he avoids capital gains tax, receives a charitable deduction, and continues to live on the farm. Okay, you can do this. It's a gift of you retain a life estate. You go ahead and do a remainder deed to the charity. You get to continue to live on the farm the rest of your life. It's in your name as long as you live. But at death, it automatically goes to the charity, and you can claim a deduction today. Kind of a neat deal. That's just one idea of real estate. A charitable gift annuity. This is the brochure I brought. I wanted you to know about these because with interest rates going down, if you're going to make a gift to a charity, most of them can do these for you. The church is probably not set up to do this, but it's called a charitable gift annuity. You put $10,000 in. Let's say you're going to leave the charity $10,000 at death. Go ahead and give it to them now. It goes into an account. They pay you a income for the rest of your life, typically double that of what a CD is paying right now. And then at death, the money goes to charity. But it's a way to double your income and still keep the earning capacity on that gift. So you receive guaranteed income. You get a tax deduction. I brought brochures on this. And after death, the rest goes to charity. Here's an example. John's antique car. He's 61 years old. Its value is $2,000. He just bought it. $200,000. He just bought it. It's $200,000. The annuity is $13,400 based on his life expectancy. Charity gets $200,000. John receives fixed payments of $7,800 per year, tax-free income. When you do a charitable gift annuity, part of the payment's tax-free. Commercial annuities, it's not that way. But a charitable annuity, part of it's tax-free. And then a charitable deduction of $74,000. Now, I did this example for the Savannah Church of Christ in Savannah, Tennessee. They bought a Walmart, an old Walmart building, and they needed to raise $3 million to renovate it and put their church in it. So they did a capital campaign, and they wanted me to come talk about ways for members to give gifts, you know, other than cash. Now, the church couldn't do the gift annuity, but we found one of the donors to Fried Hardeman that also went to the church. So she gave the money, not an antique car, but she gave the money to Fried Hardeman. We set up a gift, and then she doubled her income. So then she was able to keep the money that would have been coming out from her CD, and she took the extra money and she gave it to the church. So that's what we did in that situation. Okay, and a charitable remainder trust. Basically, the way this works is you put money in it, you get income for the rest of your life, and at death it goes to the charity. Same way as a gift annuity. You can also do this at death. Donor transfers a gift to charity. Donor avoids capital gains taxes. And then they get more cash flow. Because if they just sell that asset outside of the trust, then they have to pay capital gains. So there's not as much money there to generate their income. After death, the principal goes to charity. Let's look at an example. John is 66. He no longer uses his beach house. That's terrible. No longer uses his beach house. John sets up a trust for the lives of his wife and children. His wife is 65. His children are 37 and 38 years old. John decides to use Fried Hardeman, of course, to set up the trust. So the value of the house is $200,000, not much of a beach house. Cost is $10,000. The gain's $190,000. This is what happens. Now remember, if you go back here, could you imagine the life expectancies of somebody that's 66, 65, 37, 38? It was over 50 years. Okay, so if that's why the estimated income for life is $1.2 million. And we actually did this. It was a farm. It wasn't a beach house. And so the person that set up the trust gets income for the rest of their life. At her death, her husband gets income for the rest of his life. At his death, the children split income for the rest of their lives. Okay? And then approximately $876,000 goes to charity at the end. It was only a $200,000 house. Now, this is based on 8% growth, not negative 2%, whatever we're having now, but this is based on 8% growth. So, over time, it's a good thing for both, because you get income, the charity benefits. That's kind of how that works. Bypass $190,000 of the capital gain. That's the capital gain. The tax on the gain will be less than that. He and his family can make annual payments now to the church because they freed up all that money from the house that they did. It wasn't generating them any income. Okay, I'm not going to say a whole lot of this. A charitable lead trust is the opposite of a charitable remainder trust. A real famous one you may have heard of, it actually did not get funded, but Jackie Onassis set up a charitable lead trust for $80 million. It did not get set up the way it needed to be set up, but what would have happened is a charity gets the money for 20 years off of the $80 million, and then in 20 years the assets go back to the family. But she was going to get a $38 million estate tax exemption, a deduction, because she did that. Because there's a value in giving money for a certain term of years. And so she didn't use that. But here was the neat thing about her trust that they didn't fund. Her children got to serve as the trustees, and they got paid a fee. So that, you know, a small 1% fee on $80 million is a lot of money. So they didn't have to wait 20 years. They still got income, but it didn't get funded. Okay, gifts at death. Those were very complicated. Let's get a little easier. You can do a bequest at death, bequest by will. You can do an amount or percentage. What's the advantage here? Is it better to leave an amount, a specific amount to somebody or to charity, or a percentage? Yes, sir.
The man had quite a bit of money, three children. Two of them were wonderful. One was a skunk. The skunk, $10,000, worth some percentage. And when they spent so much money, the only one that had money was the skunk.
Right, because he still got an amount. And the other thing can happen, you only wanted to leave a certain amount, and all of a sudden your estate was a lot more, and this person that got the amount, they end up suffering. If he wasn't the skunk, the people that get the percentage is a lot more. So typically it's always best to do a percentage. Always best to do a percentage, because it'll go up and down as your estate goes up and down. You can do a contingent bequest. If somebody predeceases that person, then it can go to this other person. You can do that. Remainder interest, you can do that as well. You can leave the asset to a family member, but at their death, then it can go to charity. Maybe you want your family to still have the farm while they're living, but you don't want them to sell it and use the money for something. You want them to enjoy it, and so then at their death is when it goes to charity. And the whole point of all of this is that every perfect gift is from above, coming from the Father of heavenly lights, who does not change. It's not our money. I mean, all this we're talking about today, we're talking about a lot of money. It's not our money. It's His money. We're not in control, you know, and so we've got to be good stewards. And I'll be talking more about that Sunday morning in Bible study hour. But, you know, it's not our money. We're stewards. A steward is a manager. It's not an owner. It's a manager of somebody else's assets, and that's what we are. And so I hope that some of the ideas we talked about today can help you be better stewards of the gifts we've been given by God, and can help other people at some point. Any questions? We have 10 minutes. Steve, why don't you turn that back light on? Are there any questions, comments, or smart remarks?
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Before we get up, I have a evaluation, because I always like to know if I'm doing a good job. If you'll pass those out on this side. And then this is a record of your attendance. And then if you want more information about any of the things we talked about today, if you'll put that on there. We appreciate the opportunity to come out. It's always good to do this with brothers and sisters in Christ. I didn't give the last door prize away. So let's go back to our presentation, and you've got to answer it in about 10 seconds, because I don't want you to look it up. on your presentation, but can anybody tell me how old you have to be when you start taking minimum distributions? All right, she beat you to the punch back there. I bet you watch Jeopardy.
Well, no, we're 70.
Yeah, you're 70.